Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
And Jules Gill.
Hello.
On the grand return of this thing in 2020, did we do another one before now? I don't know if we did.
No.
No, this is the first one back.
It's going to be the first one in a bold new world.
The first podcast of 2020, so there are lots of eyes and ears on us now. So guys, we cannot mess this
up. Sweet Jesus.
It's very important. We've got a story to tell and we should tell it well.
Well, speaking of stories, I sketched out a thing based on video game stories because I spent most of the last few days playing a lovely little indie game called The Red Strings Club, which I'll get into in a bit later. It's been on. It came out on PC in 2018. It's been like I think it was a Kickstarter thing or a crowdfunded thing, but I got the Switch one. I'll get into that in a bit, but I just wanted to talk about how awesome stories in games are, because I'm going to put it to you guys as a question that I think games tell stories better than any other medium.
You mentioned this before we came in, actually, and I kind of glossed over it because I was like, that is a mad statement.
Just me talking in general.
I don't know what I think about that.
There he goes again.
And with about half an hour of thought, I still don't know what I think about that, Scott Taylor, but I think they're capable of being so unique and resonating in such a unique way through like the synergy between mechanics and conventional like narrative storytelling. It does that. When a gaming story hits, it hits better than anything else, if that makes sense.
My thing was, I read an article a while ago that said that like gaming is the amalgamation of every other artistic skill. Mm. Like even the likes of architecture and creating like 3D spaces, and you know, because like, that whole thing with like The Witness, like Jonathan Blow hired a team of like builders and architects to like try and visualize how that island would work in real 3D space. Mm. And it's so that like, you know, as much as that game is kind of whimsical and over the top or whatever, it still conforms to actual architectural principles. And I remember thinking at that time, I was like, yeah, everything rolls into video games. And obviously, I'm going to focus on storytelling and script writing and narrative and thematics. But where do you come down on that, Jules?
Well, if you look at the sort of different mediums of art that exist, every single one of them engages its audience in a completely different way. You've got a more passive, some would say, in terms of cinema, where you sit down, you watch, you are told a story. You have no influence over it, but you can feel for the character, obviously, because you insert yourself into it, and obviously you react to the stimuli that's going on. You've got like painting and art and sculpture, when you look at it and it's literally your interpretation of an event that tells a story. Now, video games are interesting because of the fact that you are sold immediacy. Like, that is what makes it feel so much more impactful, because you are in control of the avatar. If they get hurt, that is you getting hurt. Things like having rumble feedback on controllers and stuff like that, it's another way of making that 4D. Like you know,
you remember when they came in and it was like, oh, it's going to feel like driving a car. Yeah. I'm sitting playing Circuit Breakers. Like, this is nothing like
We're joking about this now, but that's literally what the PlayStation 5 is being sold on.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah.
Haptic,
yeah.
Feedback controllers.
That's why I don't buy it.
And then you've got VR as well, that is obviously like so immersive, because it is literally like your one-to-one movement. It tells its story like in very different ways. However, my stance at the start of this podcast, and I hope that you'll change it, is that video games do not tell stories better than other mediums. I'm not saying that like it's potentially unquantifiable, but the reason being that when you are telling a story, you put out all the cutscenes on paper and you watch it and you go like, yeah, that's actually a brilliant story that's telling you. Gameplay can take you out of that, because it's like, if you put all of the story elements together, you might realize that that's epic grand story that you were thinking of, it's actually pretty bare bones on paper, because you were actually fleshing it out with just hours and hours of plodding around doing hacking and slashing and biting and Triting,
ripping and tearing.
Dooming. Yeah,
I think. I mean, yeah, I think obviously, like, gaming has that sort of active agency thing. But for me, that's what makes it like even better. Like, I like that I'm plotting a course through this world. It depends how it's done. There's obviously like a lot of balance. Like GTA 4 had that whole thing around ludonarrative dissonance, and like, you know, the idea that you can play Nico in a way that is different to the way he's portrayed in cutscenes. But for me, it's not like every video game does it better than, you know, book or film. But for me, it's like they roll all those things together. Like, you cite cutscenes, it's like, well, that's film. You know, script writing is more like book. So there's stuff that's way more text heavy. Like Red Strings is very much a very text heavy game. So it's like, you know, if I just read through that with the descriptions rather than just taking it in, like, would that have worked in the same way?
I don't want to jump into my examples too much.
I should mention that we all have examples of stuff that we're going to mention along the way too.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of like when I was playing A Night in the Woods, that story works so well because you're playing through the cycle of this same like monotonous day of like you're living in between spaces, you're back at home with your parents, you don't have a job, and you're trying to just do the same sort of routine over and over again. And that works so well in a video game form because you have to play that day over and over again, so you get used to the familiarity of it and the safety of it, and then also, you know, the monotony of it. You don't think you would get that in a film because a film wouldn't have time to dedicate, you know, that much sort of story space to showing you the same series of events over and over again. I do think it makes it more impactful as well because you're actively, you know, involved in it. Even a book, which obviously has way more, you know, luxury to spend its time, you know, going into sort of the minutiae of what your character's feeling or their day-to-day activities. I still don't think that sort of cycle of driving home a narrative point through kind of actively being involved in it, like, works as well as it does in that video.
Like, if you were to, like, say, Jules, I want to watch this film, it's called The Life and Times of Johnny Grimes, like, I would sit down with you, and if it was just watching him go to work and then come home, I would be like, this is incredibly boring, because you're not showing me anything that is outside of my real life, and you want to escape the monotony of those things. But like you were saying, when you're playing it, when you are in control of, like, do I want to go and have a coffee with James, or do I want to go and potentially hit it off with the new HR person that's come in and try and make new friends? It's like those tiny choices suddenly mean a lot more because you're like, oh, my involvement in this is so much greater. It's like why people play The Sims. The Sims is, on paper, potentially one of the most boring games in the world. I know, because it is just life. Why would you want to spend your life going home playing another person's life when you're just trying to get them jobs, albeit very fun and comedic way that they've done it?
The Sims fandom aren't going to pop out of the sky, take us down.
It's just I always worry that we'll just see those giant green triangle like the prisms. The prism will float along and it'd be like the Borg. You just go like, you have been assimilated.
I think we call the guy that invented The Sims, but he just sort of descends down. The man that's in charge of it all.
Will Sharp?
Mr. Sim.
Similar. Yeah. I mean, in regards to that one, you mentioned something before about Jimmy Grimes. I'll recommend a film called The Lovely Life of Jimmy Grimble, which people will know. Lovely little football film. Another thing was pivoting into like that idea of like interactivity, because I always find when a game posits a choice, like, well, actually I was going to mention before when you said about, you know, the mundanity of some scenarios in games, like for me, Edith Finch, and you've got this as one of your examples, Josh, but like, you know, if a game was just about following someone around a house, or like, you know, it was a very like mundane situation, if in game form, I'll take that. Like, you know, you can just give me like just a character standing in a completely white room, and I'll sit and think, oh, what does it mean? What does it mean to walk around? Oh, I feel really lonely and isolated. And oh my God, it's going for all these different things. But if I was watching it in the film, I would get bored to tears.
Yeah.
And it, for me, it is that agency in it, and that interactivity in it.
Have you seen, you guys have seen Ghost Story?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the right one. It's
the pie scene.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. Right, the pie scene is the perfect example of this, because if I was playing in a video game and it gave me a prompt to eat the pie, and I had to get all of these like little like dials spinning, you know, when the old Tiger Woods games, you had to hit the power meter and get the pie level up and get your fork in at the right angle,
that
could be the most immersive bit of gameplay ever. In that film, it went from being, oh, this is pretty intense, to, God, this is really intense, to, God, this is really boring now. I'm laughing at this now. Oh, it's got really intense again. Now she's eating the whole pie.
Yeah, Ghost Story has a scene where a character eats a pie for about 25 minutes, just fully eats a pie. Josh has a genuinely amazing take on this.
It's 7 minutes long,
isn't it?
It feels like about 25 minutes.
But the reality of that scene, which is like a whole, you know, part of like reading film and game and stuff, is that like it can, like, yeah, maybe it's meant to make you feel a negative emotion.
Yeah.
Like one of your takes on it, Josh, was like, you know, like it is meant to make you feel like what it's like going through a grieving process and somewhat taking your anger out on this pie, just being like, oh my God, all I have is this thing.
But the thing is that like film is basically a game with an audience. It's basically trying to tell them a story, then tell them the subtext and do it in a fair way. It's like the same with video games in that sense. The pie scene, I know that we'll move on from this pie scene eventually, is that you get everything you need to get out of that within 3 minutes. The fact that it's elongated is basically just the director just going, oh, I'm so torturous and
that
mean.
That would kind of be my take.
Aren't I just awful trying to make you experience some of the same things? It's like, yes, but we already got it. Mm-hmm. Like, now you're infuriating us from doing it.
It's kind of like by purposefully dragging it out, it did make that point. I don't know if you want to mention it. I know it's a hell of a movie on many levels.
Yeah, is this now the pie cast?
This is the pie cast now. Come on. Top 10 pies you won't believe. I think that's when it comes to like those scenes in movies, though. I feel like we are more standoffish with them. If you're not in the mood then you don't go with it. Whereas in a game, you're already invested because you've got this active participation in it. So when something like that might happen, I feel like you want to give it the benefit of the doubt because it doesn't feel like wasted time in a game. If you have a 7-minute sequence when you're eating a pie in a game and that's all you're doing, that's part of potentially 40 hours of gameplay. Whereas if you have it in a movie, that's 7 minutes out of a 90-minute movie. It feels more substantial and you might get a bit more annoyed of it because you're thinking, what else could be doing?
And you're aware that you're just sitting there.
Time? Yeah,
well,
yeah.
A lot of people got annoyed at the ending of Death Stranding. Like, I'm not going to spoil what happens, but you told me that it goes into a 2-hour cutscene. So what you do is...
That's not what I hate, but yeah.
But you play effectively 40 hours plus of a video game to be fed a movie. Mm-hmm. So that changes the entire relationship between the player audience.
Yeah, having his cake and wanting to eat it too. Mm. But that's very much him going like, well...
Have his pie.
And his pie. Yeah, he's very much a filmic auteur, but he likes to... He's always straddled between both sides. And obviously, he's then got on to say that he wants to make movies and animes and TV shows going forward.
Well, duh.
And for years, he's been saying he wants to be a director. So like in that case, he wants to try and do both. But they kind of clash because it's like, well, you could have done the storytelling more interactively or more as a more through-line thing beforehand rather than putting your audience on the back foot and treating them as passive again. Like that passive active thing is always the core of it for me. I want to be engaged. And so I think, well, actually, the other thing I was going to mention was like when games give you choices, I don't know if you have the same quandary as I do, where it's like, a game asks you, do you want to see this or this? Do you want to do this or this? Mm-hmm. And it's like, for me, it's always like three different ways. It's like, what do I want to see as the player? What should the character do? Or like, or what do I think they would, what do I, yeah, it's like, the hell did I wrote this down.
So, I know what you mean, where it's basically like you've got your choice that you're doing it for them, the choice that you do it for you, and then usually the choice that's just like, I have no idea, this is just something crazy.
Yeah, I had it written down as like, what do I want, what does the character want, or what do I want to see?
Yeah.
And so it's like, my personal morals versus like, oh, that sounds like a cool action thing if I do that, versus like, oh, but the character makes sense to do this. Like, I remember clashing with that in GTA 4, where it's like, okay, like, I guess I would take this character out because this is a big bad villain, but I don't feel like Nico would, and that kind of not being a thing.
It's one of the biggest problems that I've got with the Dead Rising franchise is that I adore those games because of their like the weird time structure mechanic and the sort of like craziness that you can have in it. But I hated every single time that you would go from shoving a bucket with drills onto somebody's head and going, lol, there's a teddy bear with a minigun, to then 2 scenes later just going, the tragedy of human life. Yeah. I cannot believe we are so expendable. Oh, woe is me. Tragedy. And it's just like, no. This tonal flippancy is just like, it's not working for me.
Mm-hmm. I think we've like over the past few years we've gotten better at sort of dealing with that ludonarrative dissonance in a way. Like I feel like games, when they started telling more mature stories, also had a problem with kind of gamifying morality in a way. Like when you play through Mass Effect 1 for me, which I love, I was, when I first tried it, I was tempted to do Paragon choices for this or Renegade choices for that, depending on what I thought about the situation at the time. But then that wasn't the optimum way to play that game, because if you wanted to unlock all of the dialogue options, you had to either be entirely Paragon or entirely Renegade.
You've got to punch the journalist in the face,
exactly, Josh. Otherwise you'd get to late on in that game and you would get to a point where you were talking to a character who will die unless you have unlocked these options.
Yeah.
But you can't have unlocked those options if you were trying to, tore that line of morality. Mm. You had to either be all good or all bad. And I do think we've gotten away with that. Like, for me, Red Dead Redemption 2, and I know Scott doesn't entirely agree with this, but I think when you're playing as Arthur Morgan in that game, I feel like that game does everything it can to encourage you to play as Arthur Morgan and not role play as, some random cowboy. Mm. I feel like his personality, for me at least, is very much defined, and then you're making those choices not based on what you want to see or what you want to happen, but what you think he would do in the situation.
Mine was the total opposite.
Because
you start out that game knowing how much bad stuff he's done, therefore it sets a tone that you can either have a redemptive arc or that he begins in that. It's like, I love the idea of setting up characters so that your stories actually make sense for them. Like, it's why I keep banging on about Fallout New Vegas. Is like, for me, the Courier is the best character you can get in the Fallout universe, because they existed before the vaults. They weren't a vault people, so they understand. Yeah, they understand how caps work. They're not freaked out suddenly by that, because I hated how many times you would go out of the vault and immediately just go, oh, I better just pick up this big collection of bottle caps because I instinctively know that this is money.
It's a super mutant. I know what that is.
It makes sense. And therefore, the choices derided from that go like, oh, well, he's going to have a history. Like, or they're going to have a history. That means you can act in any way you want because they've got a clean slate, but have knowledge of the world around them.
Yeah, I think that's like a great example, because compared to Fallout 3, when you get your entire history up until the point you leave the vault in that game, you literally play through your birth and then your childhood. Yeah. You get to know the people. You get to know your father, who you're chasing down throughout the wasteland. So it always felt a bit incongruous when you could just go out and also shoot some guys in the face or nuke an entire town on a whim.
Yeah, I know.
And then meet up with your dad and he's like, oh, dude, I'm a bit disappointed with that, you know. Yeah. Oh, man, I thought I taught
that's
you
not how I raised
this.
You.
Slap of the wrist.
But also, I kind of need you to help me with this water purifier, so we'll just push that under the rug. Push that trauma away.
But Fallout's a good example of a game that has, on paper, the story itself is just kind of a bit wishy-washy because they don't put so much emphasis on it because they want you to go out and explore. But then you've got games that are like The Last of Us, or like God of War, which tell these immersive, really emotional storytelling moments.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
But then have like little sections of lots of action in between that you're just kind of like, huh, this, I wonder if I would enjoy the story so much if it was fed so... I'm trying to word this correctly because I don't want to come across and piss people off who are fans of the game, but it's just the gameplay of the fighting and action is not bad, but ask yourself...
It's not recommendable for that.
Did it ever get too much? Did it take away from the story work? Because there were times in God of War where I would go off for exploring, go back to the main quest, and they'd be like, oh, we're going to go get this magic chisel now. And I'm like, magic chisel? What? Hold on a minute.
I've got ashes to deliver.
Yeah, I was like... When did my story of just going up the top of the mountain get so needlessly complicated? Uh-huh. Like, that wouldn't make a good film.
Yeah.
I realized this. Like, God of War, the story, the way it tells its story would be a bad film. Because every single time it'd be like, ah, sorry, pal, you haven't got it. They've gamified a story of going from A to B. So you go from A to Z.
To encapsulate the point that I'm making overall, though, is that it doesn't need a film. Because it's already done exemplary and perfect in that version.
But this is the thing that we're trying to talk about before with doing stories well. This is a story that only works in games or potentially a book.
Well, another thing with having something in game is that we spend way more time with those characters. Like, the reason that The Last of Us lands so well is that you spend about 20, 30 hours with that couple of Joel and Ellie, and same in God of War with Kratos and Atreus, so that when things happen with those characters, like, just by sheer fact of you hanging out with them, exposure to that, you know, dynamic for that long, like, that is something that movies are never going to be able to replicate. A book is closer in terms of time read, but I still don't think it's the same.
Like, I was genuinely annoyed when Boy decided to have a little go through his teen phase.
Yeah.
And that is genius.
Do you know what? I've not experienced the level of emotional range with a game in a long, long time. Mm. And I was sat there just going like, oh, you know, this is really, really fun. Oh, they're starting to bond. Oh, he's starting to warm up to him. Oh, it's going to be really, really good. He's going to like pat him on the back, right, give him a little like thumbs up, and it's going to be great. And then he goes to the team and I'm like, no, you were so close to being okay. And now you're not okay again. And now, thankfully, everything is seemingly on the up.
That specific thing, because you haven't finished God of War yet.
Oh, I'm getting very close to the end. I'm getting worried, dude.
You'll see. But that specific bit with Atreus for me was Sony Santa Monica. And I've mentioned this so many times before because I love it. How much they are addressing what Kratos was before in the earlier games.
Yeah.
Just this big, you know, rage face emoji who didn't care about anybody and was just, you know, a cipher to just be a walking fatality. And that was his thing. And I love that you get to see the different perspective where he's like, oh man, this sucks to be around someone like this.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and they need to have more to them. And like, obviously that frames the way that that character goes over time. But I love that stuff. I was going to sort of like end on like that idea that, because David Cage once said with Fahrenheit.
David Cage.
Good old Mr. David Cage, man who would say he's at the forefront of narrative choices in gaming, but who seems to forever have his own shoelaces.
I love that he's around, you know?
I'm glad he exists.
Some of the stories I really love. I like that he's all in on it, but I mean...
David Cage is the type of man who pushes to the front of a queue only for everyone else in the queue to turn the other way around and that he's at the back again.
So one of the things that he said back when Fahrenheit/Indigo Prophecy first came out was that he wanted you to go through that game and whatever choices you make, you live with those choices. He didn't want you to go back through the game and change it. Same with Heavy Rain. It was like if you went downstairs on that first day and you drank the juice out the fridge, then you know that your character in that moment, on that story, drank that juice and that's a thing to live with. And so I like that personally because I think I like the idea that in a game that is so story driven that you have to live with your consequences. Mm-hmm. But how much does that clash with replayability and things that are inherent to gaming as a medium? Because you were mentioning this before we came in, Jules, that like you might go back and change something, or you might want to, or you can.
I find David Cage's way of telling stories really strange. Mm. That he's constantly saying that his games are beyond a simple A to B story. Mm. But that he uses cinematic conventions to tell them actually inhibits any actual gameplay. So what we boil down to are just button prompts choices and quick time events. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like there's as much emotion in them because I feel like I'm just paying money to watch a very long cutscene.
Right.
And I don't know. I've never really resonated with them. I find that the stories that he wants to tell, like on paper, are great. Like, what's it called again? Detroit. Yeah. I read about all of that and I thought, this sounds fascinating. Like, it sounds really good. Mm-hmm. But then after seeing people play it, I'm like, it's so on the nose.
He's such a bad writer.
It's like a bad movie with an incredibly high budget.
Yeah, I couldn't get past the sheer script writing of it, but there are some worthwhile thematics. Like, you and Ben Roy have like mentioned the positives way more than me.
Yeah, I mean, I like that much more. And I think it was because of the reasons, like, he actually said, you know, when I was playing, I would never play that again to see the different endings. Mm. It works so well for me because I got right to the end with a couple of characters in it, and then they just died really unceremoniously, and I thought, that's cool that I could have that happen so far in, and didn't feel like it was the wrong ending, even though it technically is. I didn't have any real urge to go back and think, oh man, that's not how it should have gone. I should have changed that, because it ultimately, even though it perhaps cut the character arcs a little short, it worked in the context of the story, and it kind of gave that a bit more power. So I like the fact that in those games, even if they're not always the most well-written, you do have to live with those tiny choices. Because what I used to sort of wrestle with, especially when we played Telltale games, was like the illusion of choice. Those games were sold on the fact that your decisions matter. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of, you know, it boils down to, well, they don't really, because they don't change the game much. But for me, that's not like the be all and end all. Like,
they manage to make you feel like that's
real. Yeah, they make you feel like what you're doing is impactful or changing things. They make it feel that every single conversation is sort of going to amount to something, because it ultimately does. Like, the journey is just as important as the destination. And even if there's only a couple destinations to eventually get to, each individual player's, you know, journey to that is going to be slightly different and work, you know, on an emotional level slightly differently depending on those little choices you made that don't really mean anything, but also add to the overall tapestry.
That's important. I'd say that the Telltale Walking Dead games are so successful, like you say, because of those things, whereas games that focus so much on choosing everything and having all that, they create massive, like, logic gaps for their stories, because you'll have, what's the Man of Medan that came out? Like, the choices that you make in there, suddenly, like, characters will die off screen. You won't have a clue what's going on because of the fact you made choices there, but the developers were like, oh, it's because you were in control of it. And it's like, sometimes players shouldn't be given that choice because you're actually affecting the quality of the story. I totally agree that being front and center and taking responsibility for your avatar, immersive gameplay. That is a good way to tell a story, but it is dependent on how it affects the story you are telling.
Can the story not be that, though? That there are like constant consequences?
I would argue that the best stories in video games are linear experiences. It's one of those things where, like, if you're told a story and you're told it well through gameplay, that's fascinating. But if I'm there and I've made the wrong choices and hadn't even known that I'd made the bad choices, I might sit there just going, well, this story, A, doesn't make sense, has plot holes. I didn't enjoy it because I didn't feel like it was a satisfying thing.
Yeah. That's kind of like, that's where the David Cages separate from the Telltale Walking Dead season ones. Like,
but Telltale will be always held up as people saying it's one of the favorite games. But everyone out there will be like, oh, it's because of the choices as well. But like you guys have just highlighted, you're not really making a choice. Because it has its story underneath as the backbone that it's...
We should do a part two of this because we have like examples to pick from. But something like Red Strings Club, there are characters in that can totally die and be taken out of the story altogether. But they weave them into the every other more main character way more effectively. And I think that there are games that do that more. Like there are better storytellers than David Cage. They've accounted for, okay, if this person dies and gets taken out, then we still have this meaningful thing to do. It is one of those things where I think that the gameplay or the worthwhile thing can be that choice.
Yeah.
And then if you get left, I mean, my thing with Red Dead 2 was that I got the bad ending. Spoilers for like a couple of year old game, like someone died and it was a big deal. And I was like, I felt like I was totally robbed of that character. Cause I was like, well, I didn't do anything to deserve this. I don't think that happened. And that felt really disappointing and like whatever. But for the vast majority, I think it depends how authored it feels. If they want to give you that choice and take this character away and like, oh, it feels like that was supposed to happen. Well, as opposed to like XCOM where I'm like, okay, I lost a percentage role. I'm going to go back and do it again. Something like that.
Yeah, but Scum...
I know that's a story, but...
Scum saving. Scum
well, that's the thing, back. Right? Would you apply scum saving to something that is clearly a meaningful narrative choice?
Yeah.
Or live with that consequence and that's intentional? You're supposed to have... Oh man, you messed up. That guy's dead now.
It always comes down to the ending. We could sit here and just go about like what the stories are and how they tell them, but it comes down to the ending. If you don't stick the landing on the ending, then fans are only ever going to remember that because it's the last impression that you leave. It is the culmination of all their air quotes choices, whether real or not. And games like Mass Effect 3 got dragged through the mud for it. If you take that away and just left it at 99%, people would just be like, this is a really great trilogy.
I would say there's fundamental problems in Mass Effect 3 the whole way through. But that's a separate thing.
But it wasn't enough to make you go, right, okay, this is a terrible franchise. You would just step away from it just going like, that was a good franchise.
Ending was weaker. Yeah. But, the last one was weaker, but it wasn't like...
It wasn't like down into the toilet until that sort of like... the choice system at the end that everyone got so annoyed about. Because how do you wrap up a story like that? That's a real question.
By sticking to the original plan and not binning it.
Yeah.
That's true, but I think with Mass Effect, you saw the sort of cracks in the entire structure coming through even in Mass Effect 2, which is perhaps my favorite game of all time.
Sure.
But you went into, the first one and you were told that everything you make will have consequences maybe in the next game or the game after that. Mm-hmm. And then you got into Mass Effect 2 and you realized that sometimes it just amounted to an email you got from someone from the first game.
Yeah.
And you thought, and then it became apparent that the scope of this is so large. There's no way you can,
you can't satisfy everything.
You can't pay off everyone's individual choices in a satisfying way that remains authored and like interesting. Mm-hmm. I do think they bit off more than they can chew. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we have seen a lot of games sort of go back from that. Like you don't get many games now that I think carry through saves from game one to game two, and game three. You can change things around, and I do feel like that's sort of come alongside, player freedom being something you can take off the marketing box. We put so much stock in, letting the player do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. But like you said, Jules, sometimes if you just do that for the sake of doing it, that comes at the cost of...
That can be the detriment.
The power of the storytelling. Like, Gears of War 5, I love the story of that game, but there's a moment towards the end where you have a choice to save one character or another. And I couldn't help but think, even though it was emotional at the time, like, think how more impactful it would have been had they just followed through on one through line decision, because then that will impact the next game. And now you already know that going into Gears 6, one of those characters has to be sidelined because I can't imagine them giving them...
They're going to have to canonize one of them.
They're going to have to do the Ashley and Caden thing of they still exist, but they can't be part of the main plot because that's just far too much work. Whereas in Night in the Woods, again, going back to that, you have a decision where you have to hang out with a bunch of friends, but mm-hmm. because there's only so much time in the day, you have to choose one friend or another, mm-hmm. and then effectively I haven't seen half of that game's gameplay because I chose to hang out with one friend and sort of ignore the other. Mm-hmm. But that, I think that works so well because that's like real life. You only have so much time, you can only hang out with so many people, and it sucks that you don't get to, you know, experience life with that other person and go through, like, you know, everything you want to do it, mm-hmm. but that left such an impact to me because I was like, that's truthful, you know?
That felt so authored and intentional that you're living with that negative choice, quote unquote. But yeah, it works.
That's it. I think that's an important thing, actually. The negative choice is still a choice. Like, doing nothing is still impactful.
You don't want to feel like you're missing out on something.
Yeah, exactly. It's not missing out on something because that still means something.
Yeah, but that was all part of its story, was to make you experience time and pressure in that sense. And I think that we all seem to be flirting around the same idea that video games need to have agency in order to tell a story differently to film and art and things like that. But this choice seems to be the issue because it's either a marketability thing or that comes at the expense of its own story because they have to like patch holes every which way, or they deliver a linear experience and people complain that they don't feel like they felt like they had a course to go on.
I think The Last of Us, I mean, we can wrap this pod soon, but I think The Last of Us, the end of The Last of Us, where they've, like, any other game would have given you the choice whether you save Ellie or not.
Yes.
I love that they commit to that. Like, you start walking towards the first surgeon, and the game takes over, Joel kills the surgeon. Right, you've done that now. You've quote-unquote done that. You're playing as Joel. That's what you have to live with. For me, I love that. I think that that's almost like the perfect middle ground.
Am I imagining then? Have I experienced a complete illusion of choice in that? Did we not choose to kill the surgeon?
You can kill him before the animation kicks in, but Joel kills him anyway.
Amazing.
I killed him. Yeah.
I didn't even know that it was a scripted thing.
If you just walk towards him, if you're trying to be pacifist, you walk towards him, Joel gets the scalpel and kills him anyway.
But if you chose to do it,
then that's kind of cool. Because I did that too. I just flamethrowed them. I was like, whatever.
But that shows how much of how powerful that story was, that I didn't even know or accept that there was an alternative. That was the driving force of get her out of there.
Yeah, and that's why it works so well. There's a great moment one of the Telltale devs said about season one, where the first zombie attack, where you get the hammer off the kitchen counter and you hit the zombie, it dies after like 3 hits, but you can hit it for another 10 hits or something. And they said in all their play sessions, and to this day, everyone just keeps hitting it to make sure it's dead.
Amazing.
It's like little sort of like blur in the lines, things like that, where they subtly give you an extra choice. But that isn't a different version of the illusion of choice. I think that Naughty Dog or, you know, do it better.
Yeah, but that's very cool.
Yeah, and something like, the saving Ellie, it's like you're so invested in the character at that point that for me is something that you would never get in film. It almost brings it full circle. Like, it makes it more worthwhile. But anyway, that was the ending. As my throat keeps giving up, and not to worry. But this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, goodbye.
And Jules Gill.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time. Maybe I'll have a voice.
Maybe. It's suddenly just gone. It's just gone, isn't it?
Yeah. Wait. Bye, though.
Find out in part two. The story continues.
<I know. laughs> bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.